This is Democracy Now!
Default was the giant sword hanging over America's head.
Hello, hi, and welcome. You are listening to Off the Hour, the Friday edition. I'm your host, Carla, and you're listening to 90.3 CKUT. We're going to open up the show with Blue World by Jesse McCormack.
All of your children off a cliff.
And that was Blue World by Jesse McCormack. You are listening to 90.3. This is CKUT, and this show is Off the Hour Friday, your source of daily corporate free news. I am your host, Carla, and today's format of the show is going to be a little bit different since I am doing this all alone for the first time with this format of saying the news. So it might be a little bit more musical leaning, and for that I apologize, but next week we should be back to our regular format with two people. Hopefully there's a guest I'm trying to book, and I think that she will be able to be there. And before I start off with the news, I just want to acknowledge the fact that today is the first show that my parents are listening to live. They told me that last minute, and I think they said it as a way to calm me down from doing a show alone. But if anything, it's making me more stressful. But to my parents, if you're listening, thank you so much. And I hope that they enjoy this enough to listen to it week after week. So our first news story this week was a little bit, I wouldn't say dry, but there was a lot less news stories as there would be normally if you divulge from the typical sort of fires and crime stories, because we try not to do too much of these here. But we'll just jump into it. So our first news story of the day, hope for students' refunds dry after lawsuit attempt dismissed. So we have a problem where private colleges, so CJEPs that are privately funded, a series of three non-subsidized private colleges, so M College in Montreal, CDE College in Sherbrooke, and CCSQ College in Longueuil and Sherbrooke. The students from those schools, who are international, mostly from India, they had paid as much as $15,000 each to study at those schools. The problem is that the owners, who all own those three colleges under the name Rising Phoenix International, back in January 2022, they sold their, basically what happened is that they closed abruptly and they filed for bankruptcy and creditor protection so that basically people could not come after them after their money. And then they were sold to a new owner, but there was no money left over from the sale of the colleges to reimburse the students. The students are being represented by McCarthy Tétrault, which is a really good law firm, by the way. And McCarthy Tétrault alleges that faulty conduct by both the province of Quebec and the federal government contributed to the student losing their money. In March, the law firm asked for a judge for the power to sue the province's Ministry of Higher Education, as well as Immigration, Refugee, and Citizenship Canada. The application was dismissed by Quebec Superior Judge David R. Collier at the end of April. In his ruling, Collier said that while the court had sympathy for the student's situation, it did not have the jurisdiction under the restructuring proceeding to grant the request. If the students decide to sue the government, Collier said that it should be done through civil procedure. So it should be done civilly and not criminally. And the chair of the Montreal-based India-Canada Corporation said that it is unlikely to happen that the students will sue the government civilly, because it's going to be, according to him, a waste of time and money. Many of the students' families have saved for years or mortgaged their land to try and save their children abroad to study, and that they're still trying to cope with that financial blow. We here feel bad for all the students affected, especially since you spend that much money trying to send your kids to what you perceive to be a good school just for the rug to be pulled from underneath you. We feel really bad, and hopefully they can reach some type of resolution where the students are able to be refunded, if not fully, at least partially as a consolation, because it's really hard to see $15,000, which is not, not everyone has $15,000 just, saved up. Hopefully they get their money. Next story, report into Lakeshore Hospital ER finds toxic work environment, 135 recommendation issued. So, after a series of articles that were published in the Montreal Gazette about six deaths since 2019 in Lakeshore General Hospital, and those deaths were labeled by the workers as being preventable, the government asked, especially Health Minister Christian Dubé in February, asked for a report and a commission to be established so that they could investigate what was going on in the Lakeshore Hospital for there to be so many deaths that are preventable. Because let's be honest, if you're going to a hospital, you hope not to die of something that is easily preventable. The independent report was released on Thursday, and it was prepared by Francis Dupuy, a retired executive at one of Montreal's regional health boards. Her mandate was to identify ways to improve the Pointe-Claire Hospital emergency room, and she met with 70 people at all levels of the hospital management and staff. So, of the 135 recommendations, which luckily for me, my mom, who is listening, is studying healthcare management. She's doing a master's in it. And so I got to ask her a bunch of questions. And I have my other friend, Leanna, who worked in a, well, still works in a hospital. And I got to ask her questions about their experience working in the Quebec healthcare system. From what my mom has told me, 135 recommendations is a lot. When she heard that the report was 135 recommendations, she looked at me with a look of, what, 135? Seriously? And I was like, yes, 135. The recommendations are divided into main themes that include better communication, decentralizing tasks, and quality assurance. But the report adds that without renovations to current aging facilities and other unfortunate events are likely to occur. I think we have this problem with a lot of infrastructure in Quebec that was built in the 60s when we were at a period of rapid spending with the Quebec model where people just dumped a lot of money into, the government dumped a lot of money into bettering the lives of people. But now a lot of those hospitals, schools, other buildings really need to be renovated. But in the report, Dupuy wrote that a toxic environment existed in the unit, highlighted by tensions between various groups of employees and management and a practice of blaming each other. I found that interesting because I imagine that working in a high-stress work environment like a hospital would be very conducive to people just not getting along and a toxic work environment. So I asked my mom about it, and she said that it is not normal to have a toxic work environment at a hospital, and she said that while in many of her workplaces, she has not gotten along with a lot of people from, you know, say management or some of her coworkers, they still try to maintain a professional for the care of the patients because the patient's well-being at the end of the day is what is best. When I asked my friend Leanna, she said that people who don't really like you will check on you all the time for mistakes to get you fired. And in the article, they also mentioned that there was this problem where there were like cliques forming within the hospital and that there was this problem where people would not take accountability for their mistakes and they would just sort of blame each other. And when I asked her about that, she said that that is not normal and that is not supposed to happen. Usually when you make a mistake, you own up to it. My mother said the exact same thing. Honestly, I hope that those recommendations are taken at the hospital. Because when you are in a hospital, especially in ER, you are very vulnerable and you are looking for care. There's a reason why people really try to avoid the ER. It is not the most pleasant place in the world to be. And you would hope that there would be some type of management structure in place to make sure that deaths are preventable, especially easy preventable deaths don't happen because that is awful both on your track record and also because often we don't have the choice of what hospital we go to. We just go to the hospital that is closest by. And so if the hospital that is closest by to you is a hospital where people's interpersonal drama keeps them from being able to execute their job correctly, you would hope that there would be some harsh systemic reform to be put in place so that the hospital can function correctly. While I have no experience in healthcare, I hope that those recommendations are implemented because, let's be honest, I think we would all really like to go to like a hospital that is competent. Not to say that the Lakeshore Hospital was not incompetent, but by the way that the article makes it sound, the ER, there needs to be some grand reaménagement. I don't know how you would say that in English, but there needs to be some rearranging of priorities there. So, our first musical interlude, there's going to be actually two songs. The first one is Chances by Kay Trinata featuring Shay Lia. And the second song is going to be Funky Thing, just Shay Lia.
To see a type of girl like me.
You are listening to the Friday edition of Off the Hour at CKUT 90.3. I am your host, Carla. And while I was on my way here, I was still researching news stories, and I realized that there was a story I really, really wanted to talk about that I forgot to include in my docket, so I'm kind of doing it top of head, so forgive me if I make any mistakes. But currently, blue-collar workers in Westmount are in strike. Their strike started yesterday, and they're on strike for about a week. Basically, what happened is that there was a breakdown in their collective bargaining agreement negotiations with the city. They could not come to an agreement. They had gone on strike a few days before. I believe they went on like a one-day strike and then another one-day strike. And now they're going on strike for about a week before heading back to the negotiating table. It's kind of crazy to see how many strikes are happening right now because, well, not just strikes, but also CBA negotiations, because you have, of course, you have the one now with blue collar workers in Westmount, but you also had a potential strike of airline pilots. I don't remember what airline is what it was. I want to say maybe not EasyJet. I think it was JetBlue. But there were pilots of an airline that were threatening to go on strike if they could not resolve their CBA negotiations with their union. And of course, last minute, they were able to come to a resolution and they didn't need to go on strike. But there was also... Well, right now, there is the Writers Guild of America. They are on strike, in case you don't know. They are looking for a better deal, such as not having AI write scripts, which I think everyone can get behind. You need humans to write script because, you know, AI scripts are really not good. They're looking for better compensation, better residuals, better revenue sharing with the advent of streaming. All things that are very much reasonable, you know, the abolishment of mini rooms, bringing back the role, you know, showrunners, because basically what happened is that back in the day, you would write on a show and the more experience you would gain, you would like come to set and eventually you would work your way up to becoming showrunner. But now due to writer strike, well, not writer strike, in the way that things have worked previously, you don't really get that on-set experience. So like, how can you ever expect to be showrunner if you never step foot on set? So I don't want to be like, it's nice to see people going on strike, because it's not, because you lose a lot going on strike. But the purpose of a strike is to hurt people, to hit people where it hurts the most, and to make them realize that without you, they wouldn't be able to do much of anything. So seeing blue collar workers in Westmount going on strike, That reminded me of all other organizations that are going on strike right now, or people who are trying to unionize. It's nice to see that, like, the union is having a nice comeback, because I'm very pro-union. My dad is also very pro-union. We're a very pro-union family. So it's nice to see all people sort of working towards building stronger unions that are able to better represent people and fight for better collective bargaining agreements against their bosses. So, with that little caveat, this is a story, I don't want to say I've been wanting to talk about it for weeks, but an issue I've been wanting to talk about for weeks, which is the state of the renters market in Montreal. Montreal has usually been notorious, notorious implies something negative, has usually been famous for having very, very, very cheap rent. It's one of the things I love the most about the city, even though I don't rent my apartment, but I have friends who do. And I remember back in the day, it was ridiculous the amount of, maybe not the amount, but it was ridiculous the amount you paid for rent. Now, due to inflation and other things, the price of rent is going up, and it's going up exponentially. And the thing is, the price of rent going up is not necessarily the problem. The problem is when the price of rent goes up and the wage don't go up proportionally. So if, say, you're having a 20% rent increase next year, but your wage is only going up 8%, where's the 16% going to come from, right? Your rent is going to be a lot more expensive than what you can afford, because proportionally you're not going to be able to fit in your rent into your new salary. So a phenomenon that has been happening more and more are renoviction. A renoviction is when you live in a building and you're a tenant in a building and your owner tells you, you need to vacate the building because we're doing renovations. And in Quebec, it is technically illegal for a landlord to evict a tenant simply to renovate, because basically the tactic is that you rent the apartment to a new tenant, the renovated apartment, and you can make more money off of the rent, right? So there is a building called Le Manoir La Fontaine. It's situated near La Fontaine Park. So the headline says, 2 years ago, they feared that they were about to be renovicted. Now residents of a Plateau Mont-Royal apartment building in Montreal are declaring victory after their home was purchased by a nonprofit organization. So back in 2021, residents of the 80-unit building, it is again across from Parc La Fontaine, the owner of the building, Hill Park, told them that they would need to leave the building for 7 months due to renovations. And they were assured, they assumed that if they were to come back after the work is done, their rent, which they described as being reasonable, would go up. So they decided to refuse to leave in protest, because they did not want to be faced with having to pay higher rent. So in the article says, first came the big blue protest banners on the balconies, which attracted a lot of attention. From there, a movement was born. Pascal Lavoie, who is one of the leader of the movement, she said, we organized, we did strike in front of the buildings, we hired a lawyer to build up a case. Their first fight brought awareness to the city's affordable housing crisis and just how many people are getting renovicted. Another person said, I was naive and I'm not naive anymore. That is sad, because renovictions are a way to make money, but also a way to make people poorer, to make many more people suffer. After 2 years of putting pressure on the building's owner, Hill Park has sold Le Manoir La Fontaine to Interloge, which is a nonprofit organization that owns over 900 units of apartments. The price tag was $18 million, and a big chunk of that money came from the city of Montreal. Interloge's goal is to provide affordable housing to low-income and modest-income Montrealers, and they are going to have to do the renovations, because the renovations were actually necessary, but they will help the tenants find temporary housing, and they have said that they're not going to, like, raise the rent unreasonably. Luckily for the people in this scenario, their M&A was Manon Massé, who really cheered them on. And so they're really lucky to have an M&A that was, you know, just for their ground up, ready to help them. Listen, housing is complicated. Housing is going up, and housing, in my opinion, should be a right, not a privilege, and is absolutely abhorrent to evict people just to make a profit. I understand if, say, there are renovations that are necessary. My parents own an apartment building, and a few years ago, we had a problem where there was, like, a leakage in the water pipe, so we had to, like, redo the entire water system, and my parents did have to, like, up the rent, but it was because of a structural issue. It wasn't necessarily because the goal was to make more money. I find it really sad how people are really struggling to find rent. There was another story I was contemplating doing. It's about a building. I forgot where it is, but I remember that the tenant of the building, her name is Carla. That's why I remembered it, because she had my name. Her rent is $400 for a studio apartment, which is honestly pretty great. They want to tear down her building to be able to build condos, a nice big condo tower. And the problem is they cannot demolish the building because she is the last holdout. And in her negotiations with the people in charge of the development of the project, they've proposed many things, such as giving her $20,000 cash. She said no. Helping her find another apartment. She said no. She really likes where she lives and she finds it cheap. It's affordable. It's $400 again for like a really nice apartment. I believe it's in Le Plateau. If I'm correct, someone might correct me on this. I might look it up later. But you have all these stories of people having to be evicted from their buildings for, you know, either rent evictions or for building condos. I lived near a place where there used to be these buildings which were supposed to be affordable housing, but they were really not kept in good condition. And so they had to destroy them and build condos. But the caveat was that there needed to be social housing. I think that these are stories that you're going to see more and more of. The idea of people trying to make money off of people's right to be housed. It's absolutely abhorrent. But honestly, I don't think anyone is shocked. You've had this problem in Vancouver. You are having this problem in Toronto. And I feel like it's only a matter of time before. I mean, the problem has arrived in Montreal. The problem is that people are not doing enough, especially people who are elected. Quebec Solidaire has tried to raise the issue of housing and the right to be housed in the National Assembly, but so far there's no action that has been taken soon. Our next story, in case you don't know, it's Montreal's famous Tour de Lille this weekend. I know because in the area where I live, people are going to be biking, and so I need to figure out how I'm going to get home after this. So this weekend, Tour de Lille will be pedaling through parts of Montreal, leading to fun for cyclists, but headaches for some drivers trying to navigate certain areas of the city. Well, biking starts at 8 p.m. tonight. Right, 8 p.m. Street closures will begin at 5, so they have started 32 minutes ago. When Rosemount Boulevard closes between Vieux Street and Pinneuf Boulevard to the city's east end, which is where I live, so that's going to be an issue. But a long list of streets will close for blocks of time, sometimes for several hours. For example, the first section will be closed until midnight. The night course covers 24 car-free kilometers through 6 boroughs. Then on Sunday, there's going to be a different route that is offered for daytime riders, and they get exclusive use of 47 kilometers of street through 7 boroughs. So the loop is going to be going through these next few neighborhoods: Rivière-des-Prairies, Anjou, Montréal-Nord, Anse-Cartierville, Parc-Extension, Outremont, Plateau-Mont-Royal, and Rosemont-la-Petite-Patrie. So there is a complete list of street closures that you can find. Some of them are going to start at 6 a.m. and go through the afternoon. And you can find them online at the Vélo Québec website. I would highly recommend contacting the people if you're not sure. Cyclists, they begin pedaling at 9:15, but again, they're going to start closing the streets way earlier than that. I love Tour de Lille. I've never done it. I'm not that great of a biker. I own a bike, but, you know, I've never decided to do Tour de Lille. But it's a fun little tradition. And while my parents absolutely hate it because they're very car dependent, I think it's a great activity. I love sort of these big collective activities that we have, whether it be the Montreal Marathon, which I adore the Montreal Marathon. I have a dream to one day run a marathon. Whether it be Tour de Lille, Le Grand Défi Pierre Lavoie, no matter what it may be, I really love these like big collective activities that we have. So it is time for our next musical interlude. So I played this at the end of the show, I think 2 weeks ago, but I really wanted to play it in the middle so that you could hear it the entire time through. This is Avant Elle by Alyosha Schneider, who is former star. I know him from being a star of the Télé-Québec TV show Tactique. He's now a singer and he's big in France. But this is Avant Elle by Alyosha Schneider.
De moi, passe ton chemin, t'arrête pas. Non, rien à espérer de moi. Tout me glisse entre les doigts. Le bonheur, je suis arrivé à sa porte. J'ai pas osé, non, j'ai pas osé. Le bonheur, je suis arrivé à sa porte. J'ai pas osé. Non, j'ai jamais eu peur de personne. J'ai jamais eu peur de personne. Avant elle, avant elle. Jamais eu si peur qu'on m'abandonne. Avant elle, avant elle. Non, j'ai jamais eu peur de personne.
And that was Avant Elle by Alyosha Schneider. You are listening to Off the Hour Friday, and I'm your host, Carla, CKUT 90.3. Almost forgot that there. So, in keeping in theme with housing, the city of Montreal to crack down on landlords who own vacant or poorly maintained buildings. It has adopted a new bylaw that significantly increases fines, which it hopes will push owners to make use of their building. In my opinion, it's not. But there are currently around 800 vacant residential, and commercial building within city limits, 150 of which are heritage building. These new regulations reportedly aim to preserve them. One executive committee member, Robert Boudry, said clearer and more precise tools facilitate the work of inspectors. Heavier fines will make owners more accountable. Better monitoring of vacant building will be done annually. So the city will require annual fees to register empty buildings and will set time limits on the installation of barricades such as fences. Certain types of safety measures must be put in place, such as exterior lighting, and buildings will need to be heated to 10 degrees at all times. According to another executive committee member, it really gives us some tools to make sure that we really send a message to landlords that it is important that they're taking care of their buildings. All of this is, of course, in response to the fire that happened in the illegal Airbnb in Old Port that resulted in casualties. That incident was absolutely horrible. But apparently the new regulations are also meant to discourage landlords from letting a builder deteriorate to the point of demolition. However, opposition leader Aref Salem said that the new bylaws, how the new bylaws are going to be enforced, that's going to be a point of concern because the city does not have enough inspectors to do a job right now with this bylaw. He says, quote, "How are we going to assess or implement if we don't have more inspectors?" End quote. In response, the city said that it's not about hiring more inspectors, but about giving existing ones proper enforcement tools. But they did not mention what were the proper enforcement tools unless they're talking about the fines. My question is, if you are a wealthy landlord and you don't really care about paying more fines, what's keeping you from not just like keeping your old vacant decrepit building just be old, vacant, and decrepit? If there's like, if you don't really care about the fine, like, what's stopping you? Listen, this story kind of bugs me. I know that the city has a long track record of promising things and not delivering on it, but I feel like this is a whole new level of promising things and they're probably not going to be able to deliver on it. Next story. After the Maine, another iconic Montreal eatery, Quebec Smoke Meat in Pointe-Saint-Charles, is to close. A lot of restaurants recently have had to close due to inflation or, I mean, it's mostly been inflation or not being able to recover after the pandemic. And it's all very sad when a local restaurant, family-owned restaurant, these independent restaurants, eateries that are not big chains closes. I feel like a part of my soul kind of dies when I hear about the closure of a local restaurant. So Quebec Smoke Meat, a family business in Pointe-Saint-Charles that has sold wholesale and takeout old-fashioned smoked meat for decades, is closing down. Richard Noer, whose father started the business in 1950, said that he's closing at the end of June. So if you're if you're in Pointe-Saint-Charles and you really want to go eat smoked meat from there, you should do it because it closes at the end of this month. He said, "We're closing down because we're missing the workers. Prices of things have gone up drastically. And not only that, I got arthritis in my knees and my elbows. I've been here for over 46 years. It's taken a toll on my body. So it's time to let things go." 3 days prior to the news that the Maine was closing, the Maine Deli Smokehouse, 3 days after the announcement that Quebec Smoked Meat was closing, the Maine Deli Steakhouse, another smoked meat institution, which was frequented by people such as poets Leonard Cohen or prime ministers like Justin Trudeau, was closed permanently around the week of the 12th of May. This is sad. I really don't like talking about restaurants closing. It really makes me sad. But I mean, I think that's like what you expect to happen with rapid inflation. Places are going to need to close down. And I mean, I find it really sad, but unfortunately, it's the order of things. So I would say support your local businesses, support your local restaurants. You really need your support now more than ever at a time where prices are going up. And I understand because I have been trying to eat more at home with the prices of things going up. But, you know, if you are going out to eat, maybe eat local. That would be a good idea. So, this story, I love art. I love talking about art. I love going to museums. I was really, really pissed when I turned 21 and I now have to pay for my museum entry. But Crossing Boundaries by Indian activist and artist Nalini Malani is being featured at the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts. Malani's first Canadian show addresses social inequality and violence against women, with the artist striving to promote justice through her work. This is one of many things that drew Chief Curator at the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts, Marie Daly Desmarais, to Milani's exhibit called Can You Hear Me? In addition to being an exhibit about violence against women and social inequality, it's also an interactive, it's also meant to be interactive, so you can lay down on bead bags and take time to absorb and reflect on their murals. And it's going to be a race in a series of live flash mob style performances directed by Milani. And it starts at the end, up to the end of August. So honestly, if you're in Montreal Museum of Fine Arts, honestly, you should really go. One really cool thing is that I believe the first Sunday of every month, admissions to museums are free. So if Sunday you're not doing anything and you're looking for a nice, cheap and fun activity, maybe go to a museum because it's totally free. Next story. I wouldn't call it a story. It's more so of like a recommendation. So in case you have not noticed, it is very hot outside. We are dealing with our first heat wave of the season, and it is the first week of June. How does that happen? I don't know. On my way here, I was listening to the radio with my dad, in which the meteorologist said that this has been the hottest second of June in record in Montreal since, I think, 1850. It was maybe like 31 degrees. But it is really, really hot outside. So I went on my good little Palsy TV, and here's how you can help identify heat stroke and prevent serious symptoms. Listen, it's really hot outside, which is great because you want to go out, but at the same time, you kind of need to protect yourself because you don't want to end up having a heat stroke. I spend the entire winter wishing for it to be summer, and once it is summer, you really, really want to, you know, make the most of it. But again, it's supposed to be really, really hot. Things should go better next week, but what is a heat stroke? So a heat stroke is when your core body temperature is going up, right? So your core body temperature, it's not supposed to go above 40.5 degrees, which for Americans, that's 105 degrees Fahrenheit, right? So the problem is once your body temperature goes up from 40.5 degrees, the problem is when you're having a heat stroke and you're outside is that it is so hot outside that your body can't really get rid of excess sweat because it is hot outside, right? So it's like hot in your body and it's hot outside. So like your body's temperature cannot be regulated. So a few advice that they give is that if you feel a little bit hot and flushed, if your heart rate, you feel like it's going up, if your blood pressure is going a little bit down, and if you feel like you're becoming dehydrated, you might be suffering from a heat stroke. Dehydration gets worse and worse. Your kidney could shut down. As temperature goes up, it starts to affect the neurological function. So you start to become confused at first, then a little disoriented, then that can progress into losing consciousness, seizures, and you could lapse into a coma and eventually die. Listen, this is a bit dramatic. I don't think anyone's going to die from a heat stroke because it has happened. But just to be careful, drink a lot of water, find shade. Don't be outside when it's really, really hot for too long. If you're going to work out outside, be careful. Check the temperature. Make sure that it's not, you know, an absolutely ridiculous temperature to be working out at. So if it's like, you know, 36 degrees, maybe it'd be a good idea to your workout inside, or maybe, you know, if you're going to do a workout outside, maybe, you know, do something lighter than what you would do normally. Drink lots and lots and lots of water. That is a advice that they give people, is to drink a lot and a lot and a lot of water. Water is your friend. Water keeps you from being dehydrated. Water helps regulate your body temperature. Please, if you're outside, drink water. Wear a baseball cap. Try not to be in the hot sun for too much. Again, find shade. Find places with air conditioning. I think one of the things that kind of suck about North America is that we have air conditioning everywhere. But one of the things great about North America is that we have air conditioning everywhere. So you're not subjecting yourself to being in like a hot 35 degree sun, Montreal sun, with the humidity. So please, please, as we go into summer, be careful, take care of yourself, and try not to catch a heat stroke. It's our last little musical interlude. This is My Friends and I by Cri featuring Sophia Bell.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the final little stretch of our show. You're listening to Off the Hour Friday. I'm your host, Carla, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3. Usually at the end of the show, when we are multiple people, especially when we are our regular hosts, we do this fun thing where we give a recommendation, something that you might want to listen to, read to, an activity, anything that we just think that you should check out. With this new format where I've had some of my friends here, I would usually throw in sort of like a fun article at the end that I read on the internet that I wanted to talk about. And today I've decided, since, you know, there's like 5 minutes left, I decided to do a bit of a hybrid version. So one recommendation and one thing, an article I think that you should check out. They're kind of like, thinking about it, they're kind of the same. So, first things first, for funsies is how I titled it on my docket. For funsies, there is an article, it's not an article, there is a profile done in GQ magazine by Zach Baron, written by Zach Baron, photographed by Gregory Harris. And I have to say, if you don't want to read the article, at least check out the pictures because the photography is just perfect. Not only that, but you can also just listen to the article instead of reading it, because I will say it is quite a long read. It's like 33.5 minutes spoken, and that is a lot. That is, I think, I want to say about more than 5,000 words, 5,500 around, as someone who has like recorded podcasts. That's a lot. The article is titled "The Return of Ryan Gosling," with the tagline being, "As he ventures back into the spotlight to play Ken in the summer blockbuster Barbie, Ryan Gosling talked candidly about why he stepped away from Hollywood, why he's thinking about movie making differently now, and why he's prioritizing the off-screen roles he plays in real life." This has been a great read. I've always thought of myself as being like kind of a fan of Ryan Gosling. I loved him in Crazy Stupid Love. Blue Valentine is one of my favorite movies ever. I feel like Drive is very misunderstood because it was mismarketed. The Place Beyond the Pines is an amazing movie. Surprisingly, I'm not that much of a fan of La La Land, but he's had a great filmography. Blade Runner 2049, how dare I forget that movie, directed by Quebec legend Denis Villeneuve. He has had quite a bit of a career, and in the past few years, you have seen him a little bit less in stuff, and now he's returning for the Barbie movie, which comes out in theaters July 21st. As you can see, I have that on my agenda. It is such a great read because you really get into Ryan Gosling's mind, how he's like as a person, how he thinks about acting, how he thinks about family, his life. I really liked what he had to say about Ken, because there was a lot of discourse about why is Ryan Gosling playing Ken? Ryan Gosling is way too old. And he had this like amazing quote where he said, "Ken is an afterthought. No one cares about Ken. Ken is no thoughts, just vibes." Which he really relates to. It's such a great read. I think I have gained a whole new appreciation for Ryan Gosling in reading this. He talks about his relationship with Eva Mendes, past projects that he's worked on. In case you don't know, Ryan Gosling also does music. He used to have a band. I believe they're called the Lovely Bones, but he used to have a band, and he is re-releasing music now since, you know, the Barbie movie is coming out and he's on the soundtrack. All around, I think it's just a great article. I like reading profiles of people because you really, really get to get inside their head and see how they think, and what sort of like, it's giving sort of like a spotlight on a person that maybe you may not have cared about as much had you not read their profile. I was going to say another profile I recommend you read, but that's not true. I do not recommend you read. But I read the Maddie Healy profile from, I don't know if it was GQ, but another magazine did a profile on Maddie Healy, and that was a very interesting read. But it's interesting to see a profile where, you know, the author tries to dig deep into someone and tries to, like, build this narrative around them. So I highly recommend, in case you really want to read it, The Return of Ryan Gosling, GQ, highly recommend. So there's about a minute left. I hope you all have an amazing weekend. It has been great to be back after being off last week for being sick. You have been listening to Off the Hour Friday. This is our last song to cap it off. It's Charlotte Gardin écrit Fou n'importe où. I hope you all have a nice weekend and I will see you next week.
L'hiver encore tire à sa fin, il coule dans les ports des souterrains. Emporte avec lui frissons jurons, les longues nuits, les caleçons longs. Nous nous collerons tous les deux, désormais pour nos beaux yeux. Nous nous trouverons une voiture.
Spirit Walk fundraiser. Our theme is the idea that with strong foundations in place, space can be created for growth and new life. Join us for a walk on Mount Royal to raise funds so that women staying at the Native Women's Shelter will have access to a healing retreat and other workshops necessary to reground themselves, heal, and put solid foundations in place from which to move forward. Walk with us on June 10th on Mount Royal. For more information, search Spirit Walk MTL on Instagram or Facebook.
KUD 90.3 FM.
MTL 2424 presents Nonstop, a 36-hour continuous dance marathon celebrating nightlife culture, a first in Canada. It starts on Friday night, May 19th at 10 p.m. and ends on Sunday, May 21st at 8 a.m. at the Grand Quay of the Port.